Hi, I'm Ashley Ann, and I'm at the Museum of Contemporary Art, Chicago, and you're listening to Outside the Loop, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine.
Thank you very much. Welcome to Outside the Loop. Yes, this is Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. I am Mike Steven. This is show number 1005, and what we do here on the program is take a look at local issues and topics that don't always get mainstream media attention. Bob Ferguson is our engineer in the WGN radio studio today, so hello to Bob, and go Bears! Here we go again. Oh, I am not used to this whole Bears advancing to the next round of the playoffs thing. But there's some good news coming out of Chicago now, and I'm here for it. Something else I don't know if I'm here for, really, is selling off naming rights at the Chicago airports. So this is a thing that's being considered. Now, to be clear, the names of O'Hare and Midway airports wouldn't change, since those names are out of respect for those who served in World War II, but seemingly everything else is fair game. According to the Sun-Times earlier this week, quote, "The so-called request for information from the mayor's office is just a preliminary step to see whether there is a market for companies willing to pay to sponsor or slap their names on everything from the O'Hare People Mover System and airport concourses, garages, and parking lots to shuttle buses, bus stops, and children's play areas. Naming rights to elevators, electric vehicle charging stations, family restrooms, and food courts could also be up for grabs," end quote. Okay, look, I know the city needs money, but come on. And I've talked about this before. We are just lacking in civic imagination around here. I mean, we have 50 elected alder people, we have an entire mayoral administration, and we have a lot of tax money flowing through the city. So what do? Well, we sell off stuff to make money. Parking meters, anyone? Skyway? In the city's most recent budget, the alderman approved collecting almost $30 million by selling advertising on bridge houses, city light poles, and city fleet vehicles, including street sweepers and snow plows. That's according to the Chicago Sun-Times. This has come up before. I've talked about this past idea of putting billboards on the Chicago Riverwalk, and that idea was out there a while ago. So, I don't know. Nothing is sacred anymore. I mean, there is a current ordinance that says billboards are banned within 100 feet of waterways, including the Chicago River. And one of the reasons why this ordinance was created? Look no further than the giant Trump sign on the Trump Hotel on the Chicago River. So there's got to be a better way to get revenue. But if folks are faced with the choice of higher taxes on just about everything, or the Eagle Man People Mover at O'Hare, well, then I guess we should strap in for the Victory Auto Wreckers Street Sweeper or the Andreana Furs International Terminal at O'Hare. Starting a local business is hard to do. There are lots of regulations to consider, the product has to be top-notch, and the competition is stiff. It might even be more difficult to start a local brewery these days. Did I mention the competition? But that's what Richard Bloomfield and Zachary Day did a few years ago. Along with Greg Williams, these buddies founded Funky Town Brewing, and their successes have been many. From winning awards to expanding their product reach, these guys have put in the work and recently were recognized by the city of Chicago and are about to receive some cash. How cool is that? We've got Richard Bloomfield and Zachary Day, the co-founders of Funky Town Beer. By the way, check out funkytownbeer.com. Guys, nice to talk to you again. How are you?
Doing well, Mike. Thank you for having me back, man.
Doing well, Mike. Doing well. Appreciate the time.
You got it. Well, I appreciate you guys. I mean, this is such a great local story. And I remember talking to you back in 2021 to get that story. But basically, three buddies originally from Oak Park, you're getting together in a garage, you start to brew beer. I mean, it's just this classic story. And it's really evolved what you've been doing here. In 2021, like I said, you got this thing formally started with Funky Town. And tell us about the mission, because yes, it's of course about good beer. It's also about representation. Tell us what you're all about.
Yeah. You know, we're trying to evolve the story of beer because it can't just be about beer anymore. Like, I'm a beer nerd like anyone else, but like, I can't just talk to you about, you know, hop out asses and things like that. So it's about the occasions and the community and what brings us together. And we try to focus on those moments and the fun around beer and the different occasions around beer. Like, we're bringing beer to our co-ed baby showers. Beers are for barbecues. Beers are for birthdays. Beers are for Friday nights. Beers are for Saturday mornings when you drink too much Friday night. And it's just like, it just can't be about the beer anymore. So we're actually like much bigger on the storytelling. Of course, we got to have good liquid, but it's about the stories and the memories you create when you have a beer.
Yeah. And Zach, I'll go to you on that as well, because I know, like what Rich was saying, is that you're kind of crafting this narrative. And sure, it's about good beer, the product, but the story around it and what you're trying to do and how you're fitting into the community, that's really part of this story as well.
Yeah. I mean, we can't get where we are or make the improvements or make the progress that we are doing and want to continue to do unless we have the community involved. So again, just to reiterate what Rich was saying, it's a time where it has to move just beyond the scope of beer and what you can incorporate within the beer and how the community can latch on to that. So while we're telling our story and evolving our story, we want to make sure that that story evolves into something that's widespread. And then folks in the community can kind of latch on to and connect with. And that's through storytelling, and that's through events, and that's through curation of just making sure that we're telling these folks and showing these folks and displaying to the consumers that, hey, it's just not only about beer. It's about what brings us together as a community to have conversations worth importance, and then sharing those opinions over a nice 16 pint.
Yeah, I mean, I love that, because one of my interests is just community and what makes this place tick. And I know that when we have historically talked about beer, you know, I think let's just keep it local in Chicago. We think maybe of certain neighborhoods that are more trendy or hip. But I know part of what you're trying to do with Funky Town is you're trying to take the story of beer and also togetherness and community into underserved communities that maybe have struggled historically, or there's disinvestment, but that's part of what you're trying to do, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm part of that community that's been underserved by the craft beer industry, and it's really just about intentional outreach to make sure that people feel included in the space and are able to enjoy what I say is a higher quality product. And you do that just by being intentional. Make sure that your event curation includes these underserved groups of people. Make sure that you're showing up in these communities and, you know, not creating a space where it's open, where they can ask questions, where they can learn about the product and feel safe. And that's about expanding the market as well as connecting with the local community.
Yeah. And, you know, it is, we talk about two Chicago sometimes, and I think that really goes deep here. It's not just about economics strictly. It is about who is included and who's not. And it could be something as simple as, hey, did you know about this beer and, you know, what it's about? And but also, like, let's have events that bring people together. And I know that, Zach, that's another thing you've been focusing on, is trying to bring people together in these communities and beyond. I mean, you are now available in over, I think, 100 locations in the area. So it really is about bringing people together, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, education, you know, when people don't know much about a particular item or a particular product, there can be a little apprehension in asking questions or discovering more about said product. So I think what we've been able to do just through experiences that we've had you know, it's, we accept and we encourage people and encourage consumers to ask questions about beer, because we find out that the more that the person is educated about a certain item or about a certain product, they get more involved in it. They get more attached to it. They get more inquisitive about it. And then that, it just expands, that expands the reach of craft beer. We don't want to just have a microscope on one particular section or one particular type of person. So when we're able to kind of involve and incorporate education and not do it to a point where somebody asks a question and they feel embarrassed about it, it's including them. It's being inclusive. And they can actually feel that. And then when they do that, then that's when it's part of the entire community itself. So therefore, once they leave us, they feel a little bit more informed. And that means that they're less likely to not ask questions or not participate in different conversations once they leave from our presence. So we just want to make sure that we consistently make them feel involved and make them feel counted.
Well, what's going on here with you? I mean, we're talking about community and we're talking about togetherness and, of course, good beer. And I said before that your successes have been many over these few years here since you started in 2021 officially with Funky Town. And last week, the city of Chicago announced that Funky Town will be the recipient of a community development grant. Speaking of community, this is so exciting. Tell us about what this is. What's happening here with this money that's coming from the city of Chicago?
Yeah, man, it's an exciting opportunity. You know, it's amazing that, you know, the mayor, the Department of Planning and Development, that they truly believe in Funky Town, not just a tap room, not just the economic positivities that we bring, but like the education we bring, the cultural impact, the jobs that we're able to bring to underserved communities. And they believe in just the whole vision of Funky Town. So that is great that we have this public-private partnership to help us take the next step forward. It's just like it was amazing to get that announcement.
Yeah, I mean,
absolutely.
How cool. I mean, I know you guys are just over the moon with this. And so you've started this business a few years ago with Funky Town. You're on the rise here. And I know that, hey, look, it'd be great to have a place, because I know you've been, you know, kind of using some equipment here and there, but making all this product that is yours. But this money, which as I see it here, it's about $3.7 million. That's awesome. Zach, what are you going to do with this chunk of change here?
Well, you know, the plan is we've scoped out some property on the west side of Chicago that we're looking to acquire. So that $3.7 million will be able to allow us to acquire that piece of land and then start to build out our dream. We know that. So right now we're a distribution only outfit, but we know that there's a certain limit that you can go, and there's only a certain threshold that you can reach by only being distribution. And so we know in order to take the next step, we need to have our own tap room. We need to be able to create our product. We need to be able to diversify our product. And the only way that we can do that is owning our own building and having our own space to call our own and completely flesh out you know, who we are and what we bring to the culture, what kind of culture we bring to the beer culture itself. So, you know, it's another opportunity to just marry two different sides of the track, to just meet in the middle and toast over a pint. So it's a huge, huge step in the right direction. The work isn't done, but it's a huge step in the direction that we need to go for 2026.
I love that. And Rich, I know, like Zach was saying here, getting a place that's your own so people can come together over some good beer. So now, of course, the you know, beer guy in me is like, hey, okay, when can we go? When is this thing going to be open? I want to go. What's the timeline here, man?
Yeah, I don't want to overpromise and underdeliver. So let's just say 2027. But in the meantime, we're going to try to do some more creative events and try to partner with different outlets in the city so that we can maybe create like a pop-up of the Funky Town experience to kind of let people know what's forthcoming once we finally get our full tap room space built out. So let's say 2027, but keep a lookout for some cool curated events that we're going to try to execute with some different partners across the city.
That sounds exciting. I am happy to hear this success story. And I should mention again, the website, funkytownbeer.com. And I mean, I'm seeing this beer all over the place, man. It's in bars. It's in, beer shops all over the area. So you can also see on the website, there's a beer locator where you're selling this this great beer. And I got to say, as someone who has, sampled some of your product, it is really, really good. So I'm just happy I know you guys and I can get the word out about what you're up to here. And we should all check out funkytownbeer.com. Go get a four pack of some pints right now. Yeah, it's Saturday morning. Come on. There's got to be a liquor store open somewhere, right? Richard Bloomfield and Zachary Day, the co-founders of Funky Town Beer. Guys, I love what you're doing here. Say hi to Greg, and let's definitely be in touch in the future.
Much appreciated, Mike.
Much appreciated, Mike. Appreciate your time, man.
When you're out on the town and seeing live local music, the odds are that the band or artist you're enjoying isn't receiving all of the money you paid when you purchased your ticket. Many local venues take a cut of what the band would get paid, but one local venue is saying in 2026, 100% of ticket sales will go to the artists who perform there. Donnie Biggins is the owner of Robert's Westside at 7321 Madison Street in Forest Park. And now at Robert's, musicians who play there will see 100% of the ticket sales. Donnie Biggins is here with us today on Outside the Loop. Donnie, welcome back to the show. Nice to talk to you again, man. How are you?
Thank you very much for having me. I'm doing well.
Great. Well, it's great to have you here again. I know that right when you opened or shortly thereafter, I was over there recording at Robert's with you, kind of touring the place, and that was great. And, you know, Donnie, you're a musician. You play in the Shams Band. You've played in bands before. So for those of us who don't know, give us a sense of what it's like when you're in a band, you're in a local band, let's say, and you're going to a gig and you have to sort of negotiate, I don't know, how much am I going to get paid? That's always an uncomfortable thing. But what is that like? Just give us a sense.
There's lots of ways to it. To be honest, there's what we call a door deal, where venues and artists are sharing kind of a split percentage of all the tickets that come through the door. And then the alternative is a guarantee, which is considered a flat, agreed amount that a band can make for the night. And more often than not, when you are receiving a guarantee, you have achievable bonuses that you want to get to. But what a guarantee can offer is that no matter what the turnout might be, you're guaranteed a certain amount of money from the venue. And so there's risk involved.
Right. And when we purchase a ticket to see a musician at a local venue, so can you walk us through, like, where does that money go? Because, again, I think a lot of us just assume that most of that or all of that is going to go to the artist, the reason why we're there. So where does that money go?
Yeah, I would say that money does not all go to the artist, pretty much never. So things that have changed over the course of time. So I've been a concert promoter for about 15 years now in Chicago. And I've seen this evolve over time and change throughout the years. And more often than not, the money that we can use basic math as an example, it'll just be easiest. But let's say it's a $10 ticket, which is rare these days, yeah. But a $10 ticket, so you pay $10. to see three bands. And more often than not, there is what's called a production fee. And that production fee is being taken by the venue to cover the cost of the sound engineer working the show, to cover the costs of the door staff. That's there taking the cover charge, checking IDs. Sometimes it's one person, sometimes it's two.
Mm-hmm.
There is hospitality involved. So any drinks or food costs associated to the artist, those are getting added into the production fee. Let's see what else. There could be a lighting technician and a production manager. And your production manager, which is a job that I've done for many venues, is somebody that is hired kind of load in to load out, and they're in charge of managing the event at hand, and works on all the, you know, a production manager is basically the point of contact between a venue and an artist the day of their show. The story here is really that artists, in my opinion, there's just been many, many ways to take advantage of them, to take percentages from them. And I guess back to what I was talking about, a $10 cover, you know, after all these things are added up, typically a normal production fee is anywhere from $400 to $700 for a medium-sized music venue. And an artist doesn't see any money until they cross that threshold. If you're working off a door deal, meaning you're going to get 80% of all your tickets sold after a $500 production fee, if the ticket's $10, the bands aren't making a single dollar until 50 people have paid $10.
Wow. So, okay, you knowing that now and you running Robert's West Side in Forest Park, I mean, you've known this for a while. You've been in the business for a number of years, as you said, but what was it that made you decide that you were going to give bands who play at Robert's 100% of the ticket sales? Was there something that made you just say, you know what, I've had enough, I got to do this, here we go?
Well, so I did this once before when I owned Golden Dagger, and formerly known as Tonic Room in Chicago, and the problems that I was running into. So I did it. I did it the year we came back after being shut down during COVID, and the motivator for that was that artists needed to make money again,
right?
And we needed to, you know, we were all learning how to function, and we're still learning, by the way, how to be social with each other.
yeah.
But you know, that was my motivator, was that people were getting back out on the road again for the first time in 2 years. And the problems that I ran into financially was that I was operating a very small room. Our capacity was 99 people. I didn't have any food. All I had were beverages to sell, and a capacity issue. So I was running, you know, I was operating that venue with a talent buyer, which is my job, as well as being an owner operator. I had a talent buyer, production manager, and a design person all working for me at the time, and I had to throw in the towel on the idea because I was not making enough money just from the bar sales to keep that business functioning. And now I've revisited the idea, understanding that musicians once again are in a really hard place. Their streaming payouts are abysmal. The cost of living, cost of touring, and just everybody, you know, when the cost of living in America continues to go up, and attendance continues to go down for concerts, you know, we're just seeing more and more artists just not do it anymore. You know, they're not doing the tours that they want to do. They're not revisiting the towns that they want to visit. They're only going to markets that have guaranteed type of income for them. And so, you know, I'm now operating a much larger venue than I previously had. I'm now operating a restaurant adjacent to the venue at Bobby's East Side.
Right.
And so, you know, it's basically a commitment that I have personally and financially, that I can forego some of my own finance that I want to, you know, that I want to collect for myself and make a living in this industry. But I'm, you know, in a way risking that and also investing it into the art community and to the performers that are going to come and play my venue.
Which is refreshing, I think, if you're an artist to have something like that, where you know that the band, the people that you're with, you're getting 100% of ticket sales when you perform at Robert's West Side. And that financial part, Donnie, I wanted to ask you about that. I mean, you said you are maybe taking a little bit of a risk here. So that's something that you acknowledge that, hey, there is a possibility that you are going to have your bottom line impacted in some way. But overall, when you calculate this, you think the risk is worth it.
Absolutely. And I think it's a thing that I want. I mean, you can look at, I look at marketing spending in lots of different ways, and it'll be pretty rare that you ever see social media advertising coming out of our pages, because I have dumped, you know, nearly $100,000 into social media marketing throughout my career.
Wow.
And when you look at year after year, all the spending that goes into something like that and the actual return, you know, is the investment worth it? I err on the side of no, it's not. If I had, you know, if I wasn't who I am and I had a lot of money backing any idea I have or any business I have or whatever, or I came from money, then, you know, I might be able to spend marketing dollars that way and always be, you know, I wouldn't worry about my bottom line so often.
Right.
But this to me is really also, you know, it's a way to support artists when they desperately need it. It's a way for me to change my perspective of how I'm spending marketing dollars. Me investing in the artists themselves, I think, goes a long way versus me spending money on the internet where people just swipe through an ad and it doesn't do anything.
Right.
And, you know, and if people follow me on social media, I'm the old man yelling at the cloud all the time about trying to get people back to real life and off of the machines.
Yeah.
It's harmed my industry so much, you know, especially just from the live music perspective and the artists themselves. And, you know, a lot of people that are in this industry are not people that are forward facing marketing type of people, you know, songwriters. We didn't sign up to be making reels and little bits on the internet every single day.
I know.
And wasting our life away like that. So,
oh God, I hear you, man. I, you know, go through the same thing trying to get the word out about what I do. And it's like, come on, do I have to put little videos together all the time? It's, and everyone's sucked into this vortex of their phone. And, you know, I kind of look at the business of where everything is going, but specifically with music and live music. And it is kind of upside down, where you think that the people that are doing the art, the performers that we're going to see, the assumption would be, well, that they're compensated, they're getting paid for their work, but it's just not the way that it is. And it is, it's a difficult time right now. So I think, like, what you're doing here, you know, you've got 100% of ticket sales going to the artists who perform at Robert's West Side in Forest Park. But this is a bigger sort of spotlight I think we need to shine on the entertainment industry in general. You know, like it's crazy how it's set up here. It is like it's upside down, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, I just really think that artists should be the ones that are taken care of first. And more often than not, they're the reason why we're all there.
Yeah.
And I don't know a single musician right now that isn't also working multiple jobs or wearing multiple hats to try to make it work for them. And I'm seeing, you know, more and more people just kind of quit. And when I look at that, you know, from my standpoint, it's like, I love live music. I love everything about it. It's kind of been, you know, my spiritual space, and, you know, attending concerts is like church for me. It's just the most unique spiritual type of interaction you can have, and you never know. You kind of never know what you're going to get into, in a way, too, or what you're going to see or hear or experience. And that's something that I really value. And the last thing I ever want is to see it go away or be replaced by AI and screens and just fake art. It's just a sad place that you know, society seems to be heading, or we're just kind of being forced into it because there aren't any other options.
Well, the option that we have here is to go see live music at Robert's West Side, located at 7321 Madison Street in Forest Park, right on the corner there. It is a great venue, just everything about it. Bobby's East Side is great, the next door as well. So we know that 100% of ticket sales will go to the artists who perform at Robert's West Side. And Donnie Biggins is the owner and operator and the talent buyer at Robert's West Side. Hey, Donnie, congrats on, you're still doing this thing, man. You're still in the business. You've provided a place for people to go and be entertained. And now you're doing some great work for artists. So thanks for talking today.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Let's talk about some local music. This week on the show, coming from Gina Marie DiGregorio, also known as Gina Marie, and hey, Gina Marie and the Golden Bucks. She's very, very busy when it comes to music, but we can check out Gina online, ginastream.com, and Gina Marie DiGregorio is here with us today on Outside the Loop. Gina, welcome to the show. Great to talk to you.
Great to talk to you. Thanks for having me.
You got it. So I think this is so cool because your music kind of runs the gamut here. And I say that because you perform in a couple different ways. You perform some classic jazz as a vocalist, but you're also a percussionist and vocalist for the band Gina Marie and the Golden Bucks, which is more kind of Americana rock and roll sounding. So this mm-hmm. combination, tell us how you got going here, because you got jazz over here on one side and the Americana stuff over here, and you're doing it all. How did you get to this kind of combination of music that you're performing?
Well, I suppose the linchpin in all of it is that it's all this old American historic music that I got invested in and started learning about. And as I learned most of that music, it coexisted and also co-developed. It didn't exist in a vacuum. So exploring the ways in which the genres connect has always been fun for me. But my journey was pretty long and convoluted. I spent the first 10 years of my existence teaching marching band pretty extensively.
Okay.
And then touring with an original rock band. But I always had an interest in dance. So one time in my 20s, I decided I was done waiting for friends to come with me. And I started showing up at an organization called Fizz Swing Dance, which is still an organization today. And I got into swing dance, and that kind of reintroduced me to a lot of old music that I loved when I was growing up watching old movies. So I got really invested in that music, and I started wanting to play it. And the more I heard, the more I loved it, the more I loved it, the more I wanted to learn about it. And I started to fall down that rabbit hole a little bit. But as a percussionist, I started getting some phone calls from friends in the rockabilly scene. So Pearls Mahone used to perform with a band called the One-Eyed Jacks, and she called me to be one of the Jacks. And that's kind of the other fork in the path that took me down from rockabilly into Western, into Western swing, into country, and just being part of this very vibrant and very diverse Chicago music experience has introduced me to many different sounds. And I've always, every time I've heard one, I've loved it and wanted to learn more and insisted in participating.
I think it's great that you can do both here. And you know, you talk about the jazz scene in Chicago. Boy, that is extensive. It's historic, as you say, but also this Americana, folk, country, rock, alt country scene also just runs so deep in Chicago. So you have your presence in both of these. And I think that it's amazing that you're able to do both of these pretty frequently, these different, you know, ostensibly different genres of music, but you're doing them pretty regularly, aren't you?
Yes. Well, like I said, one feeds the other because they developed, all American music kind of developed together, and hearing the influences bounce back and forth gets me excited. So when I'm in the Americana world and I run into an influence from the jazz world, I get excited and then I run back to the jazz. And the jazz that I focus on is also in itself an American folk music. It's early jazz, the 20s and 30s, that from the kind of rough edges of its beginnings is my favorite era to focus on. And so I like bringing that back to life so that people can hear what it sounded like without the fuzz of the old record, so they can hear what it sounded like live at the time.
So this kind of jazz, is this what you were performing on a cruise ship for like 4 weeks? Is this what you were doing?
Well, I was performing on that cruise ship. I was performing for 3 months.
Three
so
months?
I left in October. Yeah, I just got back. It's Star of the Seas is the brand new Royal Caribbean cruise ship. And on these large, the Icon class ships, they have a series of supper clubs. Each one has a different theme. The one on the Star of the Seas, the new one, has a Chicago theme. And they really researched Chicago supper clubs for the decor, the menu, and the music. And as they were doing their research, they were looking for a Chicago vintage musician. And I popped up and they said, would you like to bring this sound to our supper club? They were looking for an authenticity, authentic jazz for the room, an authentic Chicago sound from an authentic Chicago person. And I'm just so happy that I had that opportunity.
Wow. So where was this boat going?
It started in Cape Canaveral, but it went all over the Caribbean. So we did Cozumel, Costa Maya, Roatan 1 week, and then it would go to the French Virgin Islands the other.
Wow, not a bad gig.
No, not bad at all. It was a great gig. And it was really, really fun to be in a space that was inspired by all the supper clubs I work in at home, from the Green Mill to the Pump Room and the Coke d'Or down at the Drake, and to kind of give people the Easter eggs of why, tell the guests why certain details were done in the space, why certain things existed on the menu. And without spoiling it for anyone who wants to go, it was just, it was really part of the magic to be bringing that to life for people, having had that experience in the supper clubs at home.
That's really cool that you're able to do that and to bring a little bit of Chicago to that big cruise ship and have a lot of people maybe who haven't been to Chicago or who haven't been to Chicago in a long time to give them a flavor of some of that history here. So let's talk about kind of the other end here, the folk rock Americana music with Gina Marie and the Golden Bucks, because you have your debut album out right now called Pastures of Plenty. That's the name of the record. We could go to ginastream.com. And this album, tell us about this, because this is very much rooted in that sort of country folk scene here in the city. And you even have some tunes about Chicago on this record.
That's right. Yes, the title track is Pastures of Plenty, which is we reworked the style from Woody Guthrie's original with some inspiration from the Peter, Paul and Mary version. We added a little bit of drive that we thought was fundamental to our sound. And from there, we wanted to grab sounds from around the country, from Louisiana to the Delta. And we wanted to include in an Americana album references to the working city, such as Chicago, Detroit, all the places that we know and love as still working cities, but all with their own grit and dignity, which is what we were trying to bring forward. with the album. But also, we kind of joke that it's our steampunk album, because we do pull things from the jazz tradition. And we have a couple selections on there that I pulled from 20s jazz and thought, well, what if one of these 1950s or 60s country artists, instead of redoing a cover of this old jazz tune, what if they did this one? And so we've taken an old Bing Crosby tune and put it in the style of Tennessee Waltz. And we've done a lot of cross-genre adjusting for some of the covers, which was really fun for us to do, to try to imagine what would have happened if this artist had covered this song, which was fun for us.
Yeah, that really sounds fun. And I know the first single is called Snake Around, and that has very much a Chicago influence to it.
Yes, it sounds like a conversation between two people, man and a woman. But if you listen really closely, it's actually from the voice of Chicago speaking for herself. Sometimes the Midwest is considered kind of a flyover part of the country between the coasts. So some of the lyrics reference the East End, West End, referring to our friends in New York and LA, the cities that get a lot of attention. But Chicago is worth that attention and demands it. And that's kind of what the lyrics of that song is about, just referencing the fortitude of our steel city here.
You blow your conscience my way, battle reason to slay, a lot of cash to be had, a lot of fun to be made. I just ain't feeling it, baby, unless you want to feel it too.
Let's talk about the gigs you have coming up here, Gina. This is great. We can get the full list at your website, ginastream.com. You're playing Thursday, this coming Thursday, that is January 22nd, at the legendary Green Mill. That's an 8 p.m. show, and that is more of the jazz style, right?
It is a 1940s big band broadcast style jazz with the Alan Gressick Swing Orchestra. And I will be singing with the big band. It's one of my favorite things to do. We do a lot of old Helen Forrest, Artie Shaw, stuff that if people came in, they'd look around and they'd feel like they walked into a movie. We're in a beautiful old space, the Green Mill Club, and people show up in time period outfits and dance on the dance floor. The partner dances. It's a really beautiful experience, and it happens every Thursday. And I'm one of several singers on the rotation, and I'll be there the 22nd. Yeah,
and the 29th of January as well.
That's right.
Yeah, at the Green Mill, the legendary Green Mill in Uptown on Broadway. And this is cool. Some synergy here, because I was talking to Donnie Biggins earlier in the show, who's the owner and operator of Robert's West Side at 7321 Madison Street in Forest Park. This is the other kind of genre that you have been involved in here with the country music and the rock and roll and the Americana music. So it's Gina Marie and the Golden Bucks at Robert's West Side Wednesday, January 28th. That show's going to rock.
Yes, we're going to have a great time. It's another place where you'll probably see some dancers show up, the two-step and the country dancers. And Roberts has been great for both the musical community and welcoming the partner dance community into their space. So we're very grateful.
And we can check out your website, ginastream.com. Gina Stream, like we're streaming you, ginastream.com. And I think it's so cool what you're doing here, Gina. You sound great. Both the jazz and the rock and roll with the country and the alt country, it all sounds really wonderful. So we should all check out your website, ginastream.com. We should go check you out live at the Green Mill and at Robert's West Side. And Gina Marie Di Gregorio is a local musician who does a lot here in Chicago. Gina, I say thank you so much for talking to us today, and keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you.
And that'll do it. Outside the Loop show number 1005 is done. Thank you very much for listening to the show this week. I appreciate you. I appreciate Bob Ferguson for all of his engineering skills in the WGN radio studio. I hope you have a wonderful week. And hey, I can't believe I get to say this again. Go Bears! I'll talk to you again next time right here on Outside the Loop.